KALW.
There was a lot of fly ash. It was a pretty traumatic experience.
After a fire, terrible memories can linger and homes can remain vulnerable to future blazes.
She had all of that lumber all stacked against her siding, and it's really old and really combustible.
Today, we meet a group of volunteers who help their neighbors be prepared. Then we hear about a new anthology featuring San Francisco writers expressing why they love their city.
It still resonates with so many people as this place where you can be who you want to be.
And San Francisco Open Studios is celebrating its 50th anniversary.
I think we need to be putting artists in Westfield Mall. Why is that a dead space? That's insane.
Taking care of each other and celebrating the Bay. That's coming up. I'm Hannah Baba, and this is Cross Currents. If you were here in the Bay Area in 2020, you probably remember that one eerie September day when the sky was a deep, foreboding orange. Some of the smoke that day came from the CZU Lightning Complex fire in San Mateo and Santa Cruz counties. That blaze burned more than 86,000 acres and nearly 1,000 homes. It also killed a 73-year-old man who lived alone. The fire followed years of intense drought and was fed by thick vegetation in the area's redwood forest. But another source of fuel was dry brush, dead leaves, and tree limbs that surrounded the homes, many of them built on steep, cramped mountain terrain. Recently, our climate reporter Mary Catherine O'Connor visited a neighborhood just outside the CZU burn scar in Boulder Creek to meet a group of locals that's making sure everyone in their community is more resilient to fires.
Okay, Beth, Tina, and Emily?
Yes.
Great. And this is the crew?
Yes.
Okay.
And Marty and I.
And you and Marty, that's your partner, your husband?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hi, Marty.
That's Sherry Heaney. And this volunteer crew called the Brush Busters is her brainchild. She started it in 2023. She was training with a local community group teaching people how to fix wildfire hazards around their homes.
And the first home that we went to assess as a group as part of our training looked very much like the property we're working on today. You know, 6 inches or greater of leaves and debris, and the homeowners had limited mobility and no funding to take care of that property.
That's when Heaney got this idea for the Brush Busters.
So I looked at our leader who was training us and said, as much as I want to assess homes, I want to help the people that we assess and can't follow through with the recommendations.
And that's a lot of people. In the decade ending in 2022, the 65 and older population in Santa Cruz County grew from the second smallest age group to the second largest. And all 9 Bay Area counties are aging faster than the national average, while at the same time, more people are living in wildfire-prone areas. In Marin County, for example, a whopping 88% of homes are in danger, according to researchers. The crew grabs gloves and tools and gets to work, raking dry needles and oak leaves, clipping back new growth under a redwood tree, and cutting small branches. Heaney shows me the crew's progress and explains what she told the homeowner, who didn't want to be interviewed for this story, about ways to make the home safer.
She had all of that lumber all stacked against her siding, and it's really old and really combustible. So she had a pallet back here, and we just moved all that away, working again on exposing this nice, non-combustible concrete foundation. Mm-hmm. I did talk to her, this vent size is too big, because this will let too big of embers, and now we're at the foundation of the house, so it's really vulnerable.
This work is called home hardening, and removing vegetation from the perimeter of the house, that's called making defensible space. Studies show these measures do work at lowering a home's risk of burning in a wildfire. But this area hasn't always been so focused on wildfire prevention. Brushbuster Emily Morris is part of a community response team that talked to first responders a few years before the CZU fire.
We met with firefighters who told us that fire was not an issue here because of the redwoods and that they were slow-burning trees and that we did not really need to worry about fire.
Before 2020, this area hadn't seen a major wildfire in more than 50 years. But volunteer Beth Cole says that's not the only thing that's changed. Many Boulder Creek residents are starting to lose their homeowners insurance, following a trend seen in other wildfire-prone parts of the state.
They're just dropping everybody.
Not everybody. The owners of this house haven't lost their insurance, at least not yet. But many of their neighbors have lost theirs. Between 2020 and 2022, the number of residential insurance policies in Boulder Creek that got dropped grew by 60%. Beth Cole's policy was one of those.
So what we did is now we're on the Cal Fair plan, which is about two or three times the price and really poor coverage.
Cal Fair is a plan that provides fire coverage for homeowners whose private insurers have dropped them due to high risk. Cal Fair plans are more expensive and only cover fire risk. So residents also need to buy coverage for everything else. Again, Beth Cole.
Yeah, and some people, you know, if you're a senior person on a limited income, they just simply can't afford homeowners insurance. And if there's a fire, they're just going to be left hanging.
Folks on the Cal Fair plan can get around 15% off their rates by doing the kind of mitigation work that the Brushbusters are here doing today. But the discounts that other insurers give for home hardening are much lower, according to California's former insurance commissioner, Dave Jones. And worse, those insurers don't account for wildfire mitigation in the models they use to determine whether to even offer insurance, Jones says.
So it's very frustrating for people. We're doing everything that the local and state fire officials tell them to do, and who are, in fact, helping to reduce the potential risk of loss of their property. It's not a guarantee, it's not a silver bullet, but it does reduce the risk. And yet it's having no effect on whether they're going to be renewed insurance or offered insurance.
These days, Jones directs the Climate Risk Initiative at UC Berkeley's Center for Law, Energy, and the Environment. And while he's all for home hardening and defensible space, he says those are band-aids to the real problem behind the insurance crisis.
They get a little discount. The overall rates are going to go up and are going up because the underlying risk driven by climate change is continuing to increase, and we're not doing enough fast enough to address climate change.
That's true. Climate change has increased the number of wildfires, made the wildfire season longer, and the fires bigger. So confronting climate change through large-scale policy and other changes, that's the real fix. But keeping at-risk residents in these communities safer from future fires is also important. It means a lot to the Brushbusters and to the folks they help, like J.V. Rudnick.
Hi there.
When I visit him at home in Ben Lomond, a month after the Brushbusters came through, I find the 84-year-old retired radio technician in his garage on a recumbent exercise bike.
Looks like I caught you in your middle of your workout.
Well, I do about 2 to 2.5 miles every other day.
Rudnick and his wife have lived in this mid-century ranch house for 50 years. He's courteous and inquisitive, with clear blue eyes and thick, light brown hair, styled in a low-key pompadour. Rudnick has a bad back and limited mobility. He grabs his cane, and we make our way slowly to the backyard to survey the Brushbusters' work from earlier this summer.
From here up to that far corner, all the weeds that were waist high, they went through and they raked them up. And there was lots of loose brush and stuff. Took it all.
It's a deep yard, and you can imagine it choked in brush. But the fence line and the area abutting the house are almost completely bare now.
They just did a wonderful job. I can't thank her enough, which I did try. Yeah. But it was just fantastic.
And it's not like Rudnick and his wife had never thought about wildfire before 2020.
When you get the winds come up off the bay and come up the mountains, all that fuel is just there.
But they weren't prepared to evacuate when the CZU fire threatened their neighborhood. They had to scramble.
There was a lot of fly ash.
Yeah.
from the fires. I mean, it was a lot and heavy smoke. It was a pretty traumatic experience for my wife and I.
But Rudnick says this is still home.
It looks like this is where we're going to be anchored forever.
Back in Boulder Creek with the Brushbusters, Tina Castle tells me that after the CZU fire, some families pulled their anchors.
Right after CZU, we had people leave. Mm-hmm. They just couldn't deal with the stress, mm-hmm. which I get.
Yeah,
I mean,
how do you deal with it?
Just try to be prepared. We're just constantly changing our house. My husband keeps going, why are we doing this? And it's like, because if the fire comes, maybe it won't burn our house.
As she and the rest of the crew haul the last of the debris into a trailer before heading out, Heaney tells me there's more work than they can handle.
You know, we get so many requests that we try to accommodate them all.
The Brushbusters do these cleanups twice a month during the spring, summer, and fall. Government grants cover their gas costs and yard waste dumping fees. Still, it's a big time commitment for these volunteers.
My vision is to inspire others to have their own community group. It could be for their own neighborhood or their own, you know, private road, but there needs to be more group like ours.
Yeah,
to get more done.
Maybe this idea will spread faster than wildfire. In Boulder Creek, I'm Mary Catherine O'Connor for Cross Currents.
That was KLW climate reporter Mary Catherine O'Connor. We'll have a link to learn more about home hardening and defensible space at klw.org/crosscurrents. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Stuart Shuffman is better known by his website, brokeassstuart.com. It lists free and low-cost Bay Area events that are often fringe, funky, and cool. I'm a huge fan. Now, Stuart's latest project is very on brand. It's an anthology of love letters to the city he loves, and it's free. The Dreams I Dreamt, Letters to San Francisco, is a collection of stories and poems by renowned San Francisco writers expressing their love and concern for their city. KALW's Janae Darden spoke with Stuart about publishing this anthology.
Stuart Shuffman, founder of one of my favorite websites in the Bay Area. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
So we're going to go from website, Broke Ass Stuart. As I was telling you earlier, I appreciate your website because for the times when my money is tight, I know I can go on your website and find something fun to do for free or for very little pay. And sticking with your brand, you have published an anthology that is free and is beautiful with amazing writers about San Francisco. Former poet laureate, talking about Isa Martin's in there, Jack Boulware, who founded Lit Quake, so many really, really great people, Natasha Dinnerstein, or Dinnerstein, a writer I know, really, really great poet. So I was just really excited about the caliber of writers that you have in this collection. And I was reading that you wanted to counter the doom loop in San Francisco. What is the doom loop and how are you doing that in this collection?
Well, you know, the doom loop is some BS thing that some journalist said sometime in some publication that just got, you know, amplified by every other publication. And it's like talking about, you know, what's happening in San Francisco. And does San Francisco have issues? Of course. Every city has issues. The difference is what's happening in San Francisco was going to happen anyways. Just the pandemic sped that up. Because downtown San Francisco was built for 1907. It wasn't built for 2024, you know? And so the nature of commerce has changed. The nature of how we do business has changed. And so this is going to happen anyways. It's just happened faster. But that idea of like, oh, San Francisco, blah, blah, blah. It's not true. San Francisco is just going through one of its many boom and bust periods. But to counter off this idea that like San Francisco is the next Detroit and da, 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 da. We're like, shut up. That's stupid. Let's fight this absurdity with the written word. And so, you know, everybody wrote kind of like, you know, letters to San Francisco. Most of them love letters to San Francisco, but even like, you know, even the love letters that aren't necessarily all positive are still kind of love letters, because Liz from Last Black Man in San Francisco, in order to hate San Francisco, you have to love San Francisco. You know, it's kind of that vibe, but everything in it is about people who really do have spent a good chunk of their life here and really found this a formative place and want to like make something beautiful about it.
In the anthology, kind of what you were saying earlier, I noticed that you all don't sugarcoat San Francisco.
Right.
You know, I understand that that was a decision intentionally made, and the writers talk about the city's troubles and the city's beauty. How does that, you think, add to this anthology and add to the love of San Francisco?
Well, you got to be real. You got to be real about it, you know, because you can't make things better by lying. I think radical honesty works even with like beautiful words, you know, because if you really love a place, you want to see it be its best. And even when it's not its best, you believe in it. And so talking about it that way is powerful, you know, just like with humans. We all have friends like, man, you're really screwing up your life right now. I want you to get it together, you know, and San Francisco's not quite there. But we got problems, but like every place has problems. And the difference is San Francisco will always bounce back.
So, Stuart, I noticed the word dream comes up in many of the stories. And the title of this anthology is The Dreams I Dreamt, Letters to San Francisco. Where did the title come from?
So it came from Nina LaCour's story, City Kids, which kind of, you know, when we were first putting this together, we were trying to figure out, you know, what the name was going to be. And we had different ideas bouncing around. And then we couldn't quite land on something. Then I said to, you know, to Oscar and to Charlie, I was like, I bet you it'll come from the text in one of the pieces. And it did. And I think, you know, Nina's piece is fantastic. And I think that this particular phrase just kind of sums up the unintentional thesis of the thing. You know, it's like San Francisco is this, it's both a place and an idea.
And so many people come here with dreams too, like dreams of tech success. I'm thinking of going back to the gold miners, dreams of wealth, mm-hmm. dreams of freedom to be, you know, queer, just to be who you are. So yeah, I thought that was an interesting title. So not only, Stuart, did you publish this anthology, of course, you had to put your words in.
Obviously.
And you wrote a story called It's Foggiest in San Francisco. And you write about the fog, you know, which is a part of San Francisco culture. Sometimes we complain about it. I know I do. and when it's a heat wave, I'm running to work at KLW. When I don't have to be there. Because I'm on the East Bay. I'm in the East Bay. I complain about that natural air conditioner, but I love it too at the same time. So I love that you wrote about foggist in San Francisco. Why did you want to write about, San Francisco's fog?
I love the fog. You know, I've been in San Francisco for 22 years. I've been here for half my life. And the fog is our inheritance, you know? It's here before us. It'll be here after us, you know, assuming global warming doesn't destroy it all. And the fog is San Francisco, you know, and it's part of the mystique and the beauty of it. And there's lots, and in the piece, there's lots of like little cute little things in there, because I talk about a lot of core San Francisco things, like just walking arm in arm with the person you love, wrapping scarves around your neck through the fog, even if it's summertime, you know, for a lot of people, either San Francisco chooses you or it doesn't. And for those of us who it chooses, fog's part of it.
Baruch Porres Hernandez, who's been on our show several times, actor, writer, comedian, just so talented. And he said in this anthology, he said, L.A. may sell glittery, glossy art. New York might be a machine pumping out art nonstop. But San Francisco is a lighthouse, a shining jewel, a cuddle pile of ideas that I hope will continue to let me call it home. When you hear that San Francisco is a lighthouse, what rings for you when you hear that?
I mean, you know, San Francisco has always been, it's a little different now because it's so expensive, but for you know, a century and a half, it was, if you didn't belong any other place, you belonged in San Francisco. And, you know, at least in theory, it still applies. Economically, it's a little different now, but like, you know, whether you are a refugee from Middle America or Central America, you know, like San Francisco opens its arms to you. And so it's a lighthouse in that way. And also, you know, I've traveled all over the world. And while San Francisco might be getting dumped on in the US press, you know, the rest of the world's like, you know, what country are you from? I say, oh, I'm from California. Oh, cool. But city, San Francisco, oh, super cool. You know, like, because it's still
resonates with so many people as this place where freedoms, individual freedoms, and you can be who you want to be and be more that you actually really are.
That was writer Stuart Shuffman, better known as Broke-Ass Stuart, speaking with KLW's Janae Darden. That interview was co-produced by Porfirio Rangel. You can download the anthology, The Dreams I Dreamt, Letters to San Francisco, online for free. We'll have a link at klw.org/crosscurrents. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. If you've ever visited KLW's pop-up studio and live event space in downtown at 220 Montgomery, you've seen our rotating art gallery. Right now, we're showing a collection from The Drawing Room. This gallery is made possible by ArtSpan, which is in its 50th year of supporting local artists. They're best known for San Francisco Open Studios, a month of free access to the studios of hundreds of artists around the city. And it's happening right now. KALW's Ben Trefney sat down with Rene DiCarlo, founder and artistic director of The Drawing Room, and Michael McConnell, an artist who works out of 1890 Bryant Studios. They spoke at one of our live events hosted at 111 Minna Gallery to talk about the state of the visual arts in San Francisco.
I have found open studios to be one of the greatest valuable things in San Francisco, to be able to go and it's set up in different quadrants. And so 1890 Bryant, which is kind of in
the Mission,
in the Mission District, all these other areas around the Mission District have all these other studios. And so you could go on an art walk. You could spend a day visiting different studios, seeing different kinds of artwork, usually getting snacks at some of the places. In 1890 Bryant, I think it's almost like trick-or-treating sometimes.
Yeah, some people come just for the drinks or the food. If you're interested in the history of ArtSpan at the library, they have an exhibition where it's like detailing like the first Open Studios flyer, and it's pretty, and then in depth of how it came to be. And then there's sections of like over the years from COVID to tech to, you know, gay pride, all different sections of art.
Oh yeah, 50 years of San Francisco art traces so much interesting history of the city. Yeah. And you were on the board, Renee, for a little while on ArtSpan. Can you tell us what ArtSpan is about and what it means to the city?
I think when I moved to the city in 2003 or two, I got involved immediately because at the time they provided a lot of resources for artists to get education about how to show your work or how to talk about your work or how to get a website or build, you know, business card, like all the little fundamental essential things you need in the very beginning.
Like these things that artists don't necessarily have inherently, marketing, business skills, business strategy.
You know, artists are entrepreneurs, right? And not very many go to business school at the same time as they go and study art, if they studied art. And so I think it's really important that artists treat their practice as a business and they learn how to create pathways for them to be self-sufficient as an artist, because if you can't support yourself financially doing this, you have to do something else.
A lot of people with the cost of living in San Francisco and the Bay Area discuss, I mean, it's a pretty common source of discussion, that San Francisco is losing its soul, it's losing like its the thing that drew people here in the first place. A lot of that is the arts. And so I'm wondering, as a working artist, how do you see the state of the arts in San Francisco right now in 2024?
We've lost spaces for artists to work that are affordable. Like, I started out at 17th and Mission, and where Thrift Town was, and got kicked out of that building because a tech person bought it and wanted to do all these things, and now it's two floors of it at least are sitting empty. So I think affordable studio spaces would be helpful, or things like Renee are doing, where it's giving these venues for a lot of artists to show.
I think we need to be putting artists in Westfield Mall. Like, why is that a dead space? That's insane.
Well, that's a really interesting concept. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yes, I've been dreaming about this. Yeah. Like, this is crazy, right?
The Westfield Mall is right next to the Powell Street cable car turnaround, essentially, right on Market Street. It's a very central location, and as San Franciscans know, it's kind of shutting down. It's turning into kind of a ghost town of retail.
Yeah, I mean, it is, and I think we had things like that. We had maker spaces right in a mall. If we gave artists clean air and light and accessibility and access to public transit where they could get from home to their workspace within a reasonable time and not maybe get in a dangerous situation getting there, that would be amazing. I don't understand. What does it cost? There's money here. You have a huge space that's central to everyone. I believe the heart of the city is the Mission, but I'm biased. I think it's also downtown. I think it's right there on Market Street where everything is converging. People are, they're intersecting with each other. There's life, everyone's going. Like I was being down here to do the show at KLW was really exciting because I got to come downtown and see what this is about.
We love having you there.
It's shocking. There's so many people down here. Like they're working and they're, it's crazy. Yeah. So yeah, thank you.
That was KALW's Ben Trefney speaking with artists Renee DiCarlo and Michael McConnell at a live event we hosted last Thursday at 111 Minna. You can see work from Renee's collective, The Drawing Room, at KALW's live event space that's at 220 Montgomery here in the city. San Francisco Open Studios runs until October 13th, so check them out for their last weekend. Find all the information at KALW.org/crosscurrents. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.